It's showtime.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running for this 14th day of July, 2020, to our allies in France. Happy Bastille Day. Maybe someday they'll be our allies again, if you know what I mean. But, well, we have a job to do in November, and then maybe we can start fixing things. Hi, I'm Bob, and it is Trumpcanic Tuesday on the horn. And we've got a lot of Trump-tanic right-wing intellect to take note of, if not celebrate. It's not exactly a celebration, that much stupidity. Where to begin? Well, let's begin where this program always begins, with gratitude. Darlene's birthday was a rousing success, and thank you for helping her celebrate it the way you did. Thanks going out to our subscribers for this 14th day of the month. That means thanks to Ralphs, and thanks to Matt in San Francisco. Thanks to Paul, and thank you to Kat and Cecilia. Kat in Ohio and Cecilia for jumping in on today's fundraising goal, meaning that we've only got $75 to raise and we're done with Tuesday. That is fantastic. Thank you so very much indeed. Thank you to Joe as well. I'm not sure if I thanked Joe yesterday evening or not toward the end of the program. Thank you, Joe. Thanks all of you for making this program possible for as long as you have. It is an humbling experience to know how much this program means to people, and I take that very seriously indeed. So thank you all for making this program possible and being partial sponsors of the program and making it so that nobody ever has to be urged to buy gold now on this program. No, thank you. Thank you one and all. It's been a fantastic day here. Lovely, beautiful day. And in point of fact, I've still got things going on the Acorn right now. For Ferg and me, I worked up a couple of burgers earlier this afternoon. And I had marinated some chicken strips in Mojo Criollo marinade and made those for Agnes. And now I've got sweet potatoes and regular potatoes baking on the Acorn. And so after the program, a nice piping hot baked potato with butter and sour cream and yum. And I'm looking forward to that as the post-show snack this evening. Is there anything better than a baked potato or a baked sweet potato? I mean, really? Yeah. It's pretty fabulous. So where do we begin this evening? And well, let's see. I got a question from Mike in Cascadia. Mike wants to know, what was the source of the percentage of students that pass away if schools open as a result of COVID-19? It was a Daily Kos article, and I've been thinking, trying to remember where I found it. And my buddy on Facebook, Michael, had sent it along to me, and that's as close as I can get. But in point of fact, I was wrong in one regard. Superintendent of the Fairfax County, Virginia schools did not say that Fairfax County, Virginia would need the square footage of the Pentagon if they were to reopen properly with appropriate social distancing and all the necessities for trying to keep students safe. He didn't say that. I should check my facts better. Actually, the superintendent of the Fairfax County, Virginia school system said he would need the square footage of 5 Pentagons. We regret the error. 5 Pentagons. That's a lot of Pentagons. But I don't know how I would begin to go back and find that Daily Kos article. It was a lengthy read, but that was where those numbers came from. And you know, it's sort of like the argument that I used to make about the National Ruble Association, and it remains a valid argument. Namely, if that's not what Mike in Cascadia is doing, by the way, when I set this up, but if, and for those inclined so to do, a literary recommendation, Ursula K. Le Guin, The Ones Who Walk Away from Amelas. I know that had a profound impact on Dr. Bill a couple of years ago. It did me as well. I'm not going to say anything in particular about it, but if you want to go and read it, I encourage you if you never have. Because the bottom line, and this is an ethical and moral question, the bottom line is this. If, in order to reopen schools, this blood-soaked maladministration could guarantee lead pipe cinch that only one child out of the entire United States, only one child would die. But that child would most assuredly die. Is that a bargain worth making? And I'm sorry, but to my way of thinking, no, it isn't. And it really is a kind of an NRA calculus, isn't it? Because for decades now, here in the United States of America, the greatest country in the history of the world on earth now, today, forever, in the universe, under God, amen, we've been engaging in that kind of a devil's bargain. Because we say, well, you know, we won't have no freedom if and we don't got our freedom protector guns. Yeah, but that means that like hundreds of kids die every year. Well, it's just the price of freedom. Rump! Rubber! And they're now applying that same twisted, sick, bizarre thinking to reopening schools in the midst of a raging pandemic that we as a country are so inexorably fucked up that we can't beat it down, even though the rest of the world has. That's us. And so, what was it? 976,000 out of a rough estimation of the number of... Yeah. Well, it's just... That's just 976,000 kids whose names... We're just going to reach into a hat and pull out 976,000 names. And I mean, does the methodology matter? I know. I was talking about what a lovely day it was, and here I am with the microphone open, and I'm already into full-bore Bob Kincaid, Little Ray of Fucking Sunshine. I'm sorry, but that's where we live, and that's who we are right now. But would it make a difference? What is the effective difference between saying nationwide that 900,000 kids have to die so that Donald Trump can get his school reopenings and thereby placate the maggots in the maggot states? And the maggots in the non-maggot states, for that matter. What's the difference between saying 900,000 kids have to die of a suppressible disease versus saying Donald J. Trump is personally going to take a freedom protector and put a bullet through 900,000 little brains? What is the effective difference? It's kind of a trick question. Because I don't see one. Effectively, it's a distinction without a difference. The end is the same. Would there be a difference if, say, Donald Trump went up and coughed individually in the face of 900,000 children and they died? In either the case of the gun or the cough, it's a matter of being killed by ballistics. So, you know, if you want to talk about that later on, we certainly can. Yeah, handling the ciphering for us, Ron in Raleigh says, the Pentagon consists of 3,700,000 square feet. Multiplying that by 5 would be 18,500,000 square feet. That's a shitload of square footage. Well, there's a shitload of children in Fairfax County, Virginia. One child would die. Steve in New York says, I'm going to disagree with you. I'm going to propose a Hunger Games drawn from the names of the following groups. 2 from the Trump family, 2 from the Pence family, 2 from the DeVos family, 2 from the Ingram family, 2 from the Hannity family, 2 from the Carlson family. Oh, you left off the Murdoch family, Steve, in New York. And then we draw the name of a family from the families. If the winner was from the family drawn, we would go back to school. Well, that certainly is sporting. Jeremy in Canada, or Jeremy in Vermont, and thank you for getting us started. We now got $70 to go to finish the evening. Subject line, Canada. Canada just extended its blockade of travel between our people for another month. I'm sure that'll happen next month and the next until we get our act together. And that phrase, until we get our act together, is otherwise known as until Donald Trump and his murderous ilk are no longer a halt the reins of power. Yeah. And I've got something I want to share with you. It touched me deeply earlier today. But I saw a post from our buddy Dave Number 11. And I lingered on it. And with Dave's permission, I'm going to share it with you. And I'll say in advance that this is Dave's beloved's birthday. Her name is Marilyn. Dave number 11 writes, there's an adage associated with longevity. If you're awake, keep moving. Marilyn is busy. It used to be that a busy Marilyn was a happy Marilyn. Thanks to the COVIDiots, we have a new paradigm here. Right now, she's busy finding test kits and realigning the analyzer deployment so we can fight the pandemic. That is not fun and won't make anyone happy. We are lucky to live in an isolated area where our COVID-19 cases are largely traced to SIP violators, the shelter in place, and not to our own outbreak. But she knows the outbreak is coming, and it is a tremendous burden to bear. The burden of being a clinical laboratory scientist in a pandemic without sufficient resources is more stress than you can imagine. Watching other caregivers conduct their personal lives like they believe Fox News instead of every single thing the health system has been telling them since February is heartbreaking. Learning that the populace cares little for anyone besides themselves is soul-crushing. Her life has been dedicated to helping others, and so many refuse to cooperate. Marilyn is truly dedicated to helping others. How many of us can wear that robe? Could you shoulder the burden of spending day and night to resolve the petty differences of a large group of people who are just as stressed by current events as she is? To go home at the end of an 11-hour workday and sew a dozen masks for folks that can't make their own? Seems too high a mountain to me. Yet Marilyn puts on the armor every day and does all she can to get her world into tomorrow, no matter how much they resist. Today, Dave number 11 notes, is my better half Marilyn's birthday. Happy birthday, Lenny. I offer you my endless love and support, Dave writes. I hope you succeed against all odds. I wish you had a day off without your work phone constantly dancing on the nightstand. I wish you a full night's sleep. I hope you see your kids someday soon. If I could bestow gratitude and understanding from all those who have none to offer, I would. If I could guarantee all your loved ones a happy 2023, I would. If I had some certainty to give, I would give it. But all I have is my heart. Here it is. You want to show Marilyn love? Give her a present? All she wants is to see her son get married. Want to help? Wear your mask. Wash your hands. Put a vial of hand sanitizer in your breast pocket. Stay at home. Don't LARP and smolik all over your friends because it makes you feel good. Do what you can to keep the pandemic at manageable levels and give science a fighting chance. Help somebody besides yourself get some longevity. Like I said, I read that earlier today and it just stopped me in my tracks. For any number of reasons. The abiding quality of lifelong love being high on the list. The different qualities of love that go into making up the human experience. the Greeks had different names for different kinds of love. Things like Eros and Philia. Philadelphia is the city of brotherly love because of that Phila. And it's the kind of love that is community driven and community based. It's what we feel for people, you know, when we're living the right way. It's what we feel for people whom we do not know and may never know. But we do the things we do out of an abiding passion for our common humanity. And so, yes, indeed, happy birthday, Marilyn. Seems a hell of a small gift in oh so many distant places. But surrounded by obstreperous, cantankerous, non-mask-wearing hillbillies, we in this little house are doing what we can. The vehicle has a bottle of hand sanitizer gel and a bottle of hand sanitizer spray. Why two? Well, there are just some times that the spray is handier than the gel is. And like I said, I'm so obsessive compulsive, yes, I wear gloves. And when I come out of a store and go to take my mask off, I use the hand sanitizer spray on my gloves, which I then use to touch my mask to remove it and put it away, and then use the gel on my hands. In this time, there is, and we need to get this all the way down to our toenails, there is no such thing as too careful. And when those miserable, putrid people in the maggot maladministration tell us that we've got to learn to live with this, oh no. What we've got to do is figure out a way not to live with them. If there was some way to make that happen legally and constitutionally before November the 3rd, I'd be all for it, but it seems we're stuck. And so we look toward the day that we get to live without them, and between now and then, we have to learn to live with them. Donald Trump and his greedy, greasy, grasping arrogance and avarice. Mike Pence and his unctuous, phony, baloney Christianity with the voice of God bouncing around like popping popcorn kernels inside his otherwise empty head. Mother Karen, who he says knows more about this pandemic than anyone he knows. And her, an elementary school art teacher for an anti-LGBTQ private Jesus school. Betsy DeVos, whose brother put together an army of slaughter-minded mercenaries and who she herself has as her lone miserable goal of her miserable existence, the destruction of public education and the diversion of monies out of the public commons and into the pockets of the religion industry. Kaylee Maganinny with her Harvard education. And yet somehow along the way, all of those Harvard professors managed to not teach her anything about morals or ethics. Or just plain old-fashioned not lying every time she opens her filthy gob. Sorry, I digressed from Dave's note. but those are the forces that are arrayed against us. And we fight back with masks and hand sanitizer and social distancing and an absolute refusal to go along with them when they say, come on, we won't kill many of your children. And besides, long as they're under 12, they'll go right to Jesus. Won't even have to be saved. Damn. Sorry. It really is a little ray of sunshine kind of Tuesday. But however it is that you manage to celebrate it, Marilyn, I wish you the happiest of days. And Kyle with a note says, so the Orange Asshole Criminal Enterprise, OACE, trying to make it spell something, is now actively sabotaging the United States Postal Service by delaying mailing if the carrier didn't get the package there in time or some such shit. This is how he plans to win this election, by making sure mail ballots accidentally get delayed. And Kyle adds, to tell you how serious this is, the school that my siblings attend is planning to offer online only as well as in-person schooling with masks and proper social distancing procedures this year. Even my maggot father and stepmother have chosen the online only option for their three children. Granted, all three have some kind of underlying condition that could make the virus more deadly to them if they get it, but still, this should give an indication of how serious it is, and also the first time they've actually taken it seriously. Thank merciful heaven that they are, Kyle. And yeah, I agree with Kyle. I'm excited about that baked sweet potato. But because I couldn't stand the idea of looking at one of the typical orange variety, because as Sister Carol Baker pointed out, it reminds her too much of the death yam, I got white sweet potatoes, so it's at least bearable. But yeah, butter, brown sugar, cinnamon, maybe a little nutmeg. A little allspice, a little ginger. Woo! Yep. Tasty. Well, that's inspiring, Brother Deacon Asa. Onward. I don't think I can say that on the air, Silent R. Lamar. Oh, shit. Darlene with a note. Subject line says, shit, just caught a headline from Raw story that Ruth Bader Ginsburg was just admitted to the hospital. I'm trying to find the article. Oh, geez. I'm looking now. Give me a sec. Is this it? No, that was May. I'm not seeing it, Darlene. If you see it, send it along. That would be a very 2020 thing to have. And somewhere, if it is in fact the case, Mitch McConnell is giggling. And that evil bastard. Well, he decided that he was going to take our children ransom. Hold them, take our children hostage and hold them for ransom. His account at Twitter actually tweeted today. Well, here, let's see if we can get the audio. Oh, there it is. Let's check in with Moscow Mitch. Here we go.
But I'm predicting that we will have one more rescue package, which we'll begin to debate and discuss next week. Here's what you can anticipate it included. Number one, it must have, no bill will pass the Senate without liability protection for everyone related to the coronavirus. Now, I say to our members of the state legislature, we're not trying to rewrite state tort laws here. This is about the coronavirus only.
Yeah, you are trying to rewrite state tort laws, Dick. I mean, Mitch. But what he's got here is a list of demands that he insists upon before he will agree to keep to make a further weak-kneed attempt to keep people from starving to death and being thrown out of their homes. And when he says that he wants liability protection for everybody, no. The vast majority of people who will be affected by this are the people who will be forbidden to sue scofflaw businesses that refuse to engage in social distancing, refuse to enforce mask mandates, and so forth. Because I don't care what I don't care what any number of Karens and Beckys say. A refusal to serve a person who won't wear a mask would get laughed out of court, at least in most jurisdictions. But Mitch McConnell has a list of ransom demands.
And you could look for it to be cover the period from December 2019 up until about 2024. And it covers everybody.
Wait. December 2019 to 2024? And everybody gets a pass? Holy cow.
Hospitals, doctors, nurses, businesses, schools, colleges, universities, K through 12. Nobody should have to face an epidemic of lawsuits on the heels of the pandemic that we already have.
Then all you have to do is follow the rules and not fuck up. Because you know what? It is a defense to say we followed the guidance that was provided to us. Billable Rick says, Mitch McTurtle, stop, Bob. Bob, can you please tell Mitch McConnell to take that shit out of his mouth before he speaks? It's painful to listen to that POS and his voice breaking my computer player. Sorry, not responsible for the technology, Billable.
Related to the coronavirus. Number two, we can't have a normal country unless the kids are back in school. America will not look anywhere close to normal unless kids are back in school. So look for the emphasis in the rest of the bill to be on kids and jobs and health care.
And by health care, he means immunity from lawsuit. Because as we discussed toward the end of the program, we now know that some 5.4 million Americans lost their beloved employer-provided health care when they lost their employers. There is no way in heaven or hell, or anywhere in between, that Mitch McConnell is going to get behind some sort of Medicare buy-in or public option to deal with this pandemic that his party has largely created. But there's the bottom line. Put your children's names in the hat so that we can kill 900,000 of them, or you starve. And I asked the same question I asked last night. If someone in some far foreign land with a name that the average West Virginian or American even has a hard time pronouncing made a list of demands like that, the sky over that person's head would be darkened by the wings of an endless wave of drones firing hellfire missiles at him. But when the leader of the Republican Senate says that your children have to die in order for Republicans to do anything, well, it's just Tuesday, and I-OK-I-Y-A-R. That is simply who these monsters are. And first and foremost, they are bioterrorists. Thank you to Pauline, and thank you to Darlene, and thank you to Ralphs, and thank you to Steve in New York. We have an answer on the Ruth Bader Ginsburg situation. Press release coming out from Kathleen Arberg, who does, I guess, press contact for the Supreme Court. Dated today, Justice Ginsburg was admitted to the Johns Hopkins Hospital in Baltimore, Maryland, early this morning for treatment of a possible infection. She was initially evaluated at Sibley Memorial Hospital in Washington, D.C. last night after experiencing fever and chills. She underwent an endoscopic procedure at Johns Hopkins this afternoon to clean out a bile duct stent that was placed last August. The justice is resting comfortably and will stay in the hospital for a few days to receive intravenous antibiotic treatment. Well, that sounds positively, not exactly banal, but not as terrifying as it could be. Makes me wonder if Corona Caligula is gonna have a couple of Secret Service agents stationed outside her door, the way that Richard Nixon did when Thurgood Marshall was in the hospital, occasioning Thurgood Marshall to write a note to Richard Nixon. Two words: not yet. Mitch McConnell would probably masturbate in public, if that's possible for him at his age, at the very thought of ramming a Naomi Rao or some other nasty little creature onto the court. And the election rule be damned, and it would play something like this. Well, I said we couldn't be doing no justice confirming it with an election coming back a few years ago, and them Democrats done had a plum hissy fit and said we had to. Well, I agree with the Democrats now, and we're going to have us a confirmation hearing. Mercy. Went to the bank today, Flavio says. This is up in lovely La Crosse, Wisconsin. I asked a teller who was going out to lunch if I could go to the lobby. She said, sure, I just had to wear a mask. I was wearing a mask. I walk in, and the guy ahead of me, a guy in his 20s in shorts and T-shirt, wasn't wearing a mask or gloves, nothing. When I came up to the plexiglass, I needed a roll of quarters for the laundry machine. I told her what I needed, a roll of quarters, a five, and five times $1. I handed her a 20. I told the teller, I thought you had to wear a mask, and she said, yes, but we're not allowed to insist on them. I was speechless, took my money and left. Not allowed to insist on them. Which is another way of saying we're not allowed to refuse service for not wearing them. Well, Flavio, if I were you, I would zip off an email to whatever the contact address is for that financial institution and say, listen, I don't have to do business with you. And And I won't, since you do not, since you choose not to enforce the mask mandate.
Stop telling Flavio how to email the bank, Bob.
I know. And I hate to even contemplate what would occasion such a situation. But I, as is my wont, W-O-N-T, by the way, I've been hanging on to a story for a long, long, long time now. At least I hope I'm still hanging on to it. It's been in my stack for rather a long time. Oh, there it is. Yeah. You want to know how long I've been sitting on this? I've had this story in my tabs since January the 16th. Almost fully 6 months ago. It's a story about a judge by the name of William Pryor of the 11th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. And the reason for the story back in January, and here's, I'll give you the, I'll give you the punchline now. This is one of the guy. This is one of the people who's on the short list for the next Supreme Court seat that opens up. Judge William Pryor. And back in about the first week of January, he wrote a long-winded dissent in an appellate case in the 11th Circuit. In the case of former Representative Corinne Brown, a Democrat from Florida, she was convicted in a fraud and tax evasion case. And she appealed her conviction because the trial court judge had removed a juror who said that God had told him that she, Corinne Brown, was not guilty. At the time of jury selection, this individual was known merely as Juror 13. And she told, or that individual, I don't know, he or she, Juror 13 told other members of the jury at the beginning of deliberations, oh, wait, they got all the way into trial. They got all the way to deliberating. They had the case. And in the course of deliberations, Juror 13 told the other members of the jury that a higher being had informed him that Corinne Brown was not guilty on all counts. The jury then dropped the dime on the juror to the judge. The judge hauled the juror in, questioned the juror, and the juror was unequivocal in stating that the Holy Spirit had told him what verdict to reach. So the judge tossed him from the jury over the objections of counsel for the defense. But there's usually, there's always an alternate juror, and so they just inserted the alternate juror and got the conviction that the government wanted. And Corinne Brown appealed. And in the course of the appellate court's ruling, the majority declared that, Well, jurors can pray for guidance. But that the word, O God, would render an impartial verdict impossible because the word, O God, was not adduced at trial and based upon evidence or based upon the instructions to the jury coming from the court. You know, it's kind of hard to argue with that reasoning. It sounds to me like Juror 13 was hearing voices, and it's another one of those classic moments where anybody in America who hears voices will be subject to psychiatric examination and quite possibly heavy medication unless they say that the voice they heard was God's or Jeebus's or Allah's or any number of prophets or the Buddha. Why not? Now, the trial court judge didn't say the juror was nuts, merely that the juror was incapable of rendering an unbiased verdict. On the other hand, this Lulu, who is at the top of the short list for the next Supreme Court seat, William Pryor, God only knows how many trees he killed writing his dissent, page after page after page, arguing that, yes, jurors were completely within their right to be guided not by the facts, not by the evidence, and not by the court's instructions, but by voices in their heads. This guy actually declared that if it was up to him, William Pryor, if it was up to him, people could judge the guilt, jurors could judge the guilt or innocence of an accused based on the voices in their heads. Or, hey, messages they received through the fillings in their teeth. Or through their flashlights. He's on the inside track to be a member of the Supreme Court if we are not shed of Donald Trump, and soon. And then, if I'm not mistaken, William Pryor has some priors. He was 41 years old when elevated him to the 11th Circuit Court. He had been, among other things, Attorney General of the state of Alabama, which should tell you something. He is a proponent of states' rights, which, when it comes from somebody below the cornpone curtain, we know what that means. He has a horrible record on civil rights, a horrible record on reproductive choice. And is a darling of the Federalist Society. He says that the LGBTQ community is not entitled to the equal protection of the law as enunciated into the 14th Amendment. He described Roe versus Wade as the worst abomination of constitutional law in our history. He wants the courts to uphold mandatory sectarian prayer. He's a big fan of Judge Roy Tola Moore's Ten Commandments rock. And then there's one other little old thing. I mentioned about how he despises the LGBTQ community. Well, it is believed that at one point in time, he went trolling for the love that dare not speak its name. Yeah. It was back in November 2016 when a nude photo of a young William Pryor came to light, posing nude for a gay porn magazine. William H. Pryor, Jr., one of Trump's prospective Supreme Court nominees, issued a legal brief in 2003 that upheld a Texas law criminalizing consensual LGBT sex, which he compared to polygamy, incest, pedophilia, prostitution, and adultery. Once more, he argued that states should be able to prosecute gay people as criminals. According to Pryor then, LGBT people as a group were not protected by the Constitution. He vehemently denies being the nude boy in the picture. But, well, even dedicated news hound Snopes says that, we don't know. Unproven. So, meanwhile, Pryor said, "I have been smeared by a widely discredited blogger with a political agenda. His allegations have now been picked up by other bloggers. The person in the unsourced, undated photographs is not me, and I deny these allegations. I've been twice vetted by the FBI, including as recently as this past year. I have won 2 contested statewide elections, and I've been in the public eye for almost 20 years. I will not dignify these disgraceful accusations with any further comment." In other words, you can't prove it definitively, so I'm going to deny it until somebody does. And that's one of the people on the short list to be the next member of the Supreme Court of the United States. And by my lights, it seems, and I'm not advocating, but it seems like he would be a perfect fit alongside credibly accused sexual abuser Clarence Pubes on the Coke Can Slappy Thomas, and of course, credibly accused sexual abuser Brett Kavanaugh, who loves beer and hot dogs and baseball tickets that got paid for to the tune of hundreds of thousands of dollars, and a mortgage of millions of dollars that got miraculously and mysteriously paid for, and passed out teenage girls. Oof. Yeah, precisely. Steve in Georgia Stan says, concerning Ruth Bader Ginsburg, you know the Senate right and the Orange Menace are hoping for her demise, salivating like the monsters that they are. As far as Turtle Dick hijacking the relief package, it's by design. The way I understand it, any modification will have to go back to the House for final approval. If the House does reject the changes for the outrage that it is, Turtle Dick will blame the radical left for holding up financial relief for the American people. Yeah, he'll try. But my guess is that Nancy Pelosi is at least his equal, if not his better, when it comes to that kind of wrangling. So, yeah. Strange, strange evening. I guess the folks who pray will be praying for Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I don't pray. But even though she's issued a couple of horrible rulings in which she all too easily went along with the right-wing majority, I still need her to remain hale and healthy until we at least get a chance to cut this cancer out of our body politic. That means getting rid of Trump at the ballot box. I know. Billable Rick, stop telling us who's on Nitwit Nero's short list for the Supreme Court. I'm getting sick on my late lunch in the Pacific time zone. Ooh, yeah, I did just kind of take a run at lunch in the dinner in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone and lunch in the Pacific. Sorry about that. Meanwhile, earlier, Billable Rick, Bob, stop taking easy cowbells from me.
Jesus.
Oh, and let's check in, shall we? Let's check in with Joey's Journal. Bob, who's that masked man? Recently, one of the Ohio polls showed Mike DeWine receives high marks for his monumental efforts in this titanic struggle of conquering the COVID. Yes, I must say that I am thrilled with what Youngstown native Amy Acton was able to accomplish in her approach to the problem pandemic. On the other hand, all of this praise for Mike DeWine is rather unwarranted. Yes, Mike DeWine had the courage to forge against most of the other minion Republican governors of whom most of whom are shameful sycophants to the Trump tyrannical regime. However, to place this man in such high esteem or regard because he performed a rational, competent manner is beyond the pale. DeWine did exactly what he should have done, and the only reason he looks so good is because most of the other Republicans are so bad. DeWine has worn a mask long before this pandemic ensued, and he's not for the middle class, nor does he stand for what the majority of the people in the state stand for or desire. First of all, DeWine enthusiastically endorsed Nitwit Nirona without any equivocation or reservation for the majority of the last 3.5 years. In DeWine's fascist view, he looked the other way while Trump was stoking up racism, stealing money from veterans, and bragging about how he had assaulted women. Our fascist friend said, so what, when the Trump-tanic was just sailing along nominating unqualified judges to the federal judiciary, not to mention an apparent drunk who was accused of attempted rape and kidnapping back in his high school days, Judge Kavanaugh. Yes, DeWine supports the appointments of judges to the judiciary, of who many of whom want to wish to destroy DACA, deny the rights of the LGBTQ community, and place even more restrictions on abortion and a woman's right to choose. It is obvious and well documented that DeWine has little character as a person because he has no concern for the fellow citizens of this state. He's an ideologue hiding behind a mask provided by the pandemic. When the pandemic is over and the mask comes off, we will see exactly who Mike DeWine really is once again. He's a con man who couldn't care less about the commoners. This has been Joey's Journal for Tuesday, the 14th day of July, with Giraffe emasculating the Republicans. Emasculating. See what he did there? Hear what he did there? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's be honest here, Steve in New York says. There's not going to be any more help for the people during this pandemic as long as the Trumpanzees are in charge. People are going to starve and go homeless. Thank you, Pastor Hagee. Hagee the Hut. I know. Wait, it's a day early for a Pastor Hagee reference, Steve. Lee in New York says, I heard P-R-E-Y instead of P-R-A-Y. The Republicans are experts at P-R-E-Y. Yeah, they fall on their knees and pray to God and then fall on the rest of us and pray on us. P-R-A-Y, then P-R-E-Y. And so somehow or another, we have managed to find our way to the top of the hour. We are an hour into the program. We've got only $70. Thanks to Kat and Cecilia and Jeremy, we've got only $70 to finish fundraising for this day. And it would be awesome to knock that out. Eileen, this speech by Dear Leader, this is via Twitter, Eileen in New York. This speech by Dear Leader has got to go down in infamy, his most disjointed, rambling campaign speech ever. For his own good, someone should get the hook to get him off stage. He's embarrassing himself and all of America. The China press conference. An airing, it's early Festivus where he's concerned, and the airing of grievances is perpetual on the daily. He's out there blathering about the his Chinese tariffs. And he babbled on about the Paris Climate Agreement, did some Biden bashing. Somehow he forgot, apparently, that there's a pandemic going on. China, China, China. And he draws China like a gun. One individual saying that it basically boiled down to him throwing spaghetti at the wall and hoping that something would stick to Biden. And, of course, according to his blather, everything's great in Merca. All we got to do is go back to school. And it's almost like we're in a bad, really bad Rodney Dangerfield movie. And the crazy is busting out all over the country. It's just another one of those days. Whenever I see something talking about the greater Kansas City area, I think about Sister Carol Baker. But I know that Carol, being the wise, wise woman that she is, has not even left her home in way over 100 days. Getting things delivered in and staying safe in her house with her and her boy. And along the way, apparently having a magnificent time trolling the maggots. So over on the Kansas side of the greater Kansas City area, Mission, Kansas, where there's a barbecue joint, and anytime I see a story and there's a barbecue joint in it, I think, I'd like to try that. But it may be, it'd be a while anyway, you sliced it, but see what barbecue, sliced, you know, not chopped. But definitely not right now. RJ's BBQ Shack in Mission, Kansas is enforcing the masking mandate And a guy came in last week, and one of the workers there, a guy by the name of Arlo Kinsey, asked the guy who walked in, wearing, of course, a maggot hat, but no mask. Well, Arlo Kinsey asked him to put on a mask. And the guy in the maggot hat said, I got an exemption. At which point he pulled up the hem of his shirt and displayed a handgun in a holster. Arlo Kinsey was not, wasn't going to stick around and argue the finer points, so he went and got his boss, the guy who owns RJ's BBQ, a guy named Bob Palmgren. Interviewed by the Kansas City Star, Bob Palmgren, who is a former Marine, said, well, I like Trump. Everybody's got problems, but it doesn't make a difference. You don't have a mask on. And I'm like, your gun's not going to kill coronavirus. Now get the hell out of here. At which point, the aggrieved maggot said, well, I won't ever come back here again. And Palmgren telling the Kansas City Star, he goes, well, I won't be in here anymore. And Palmgren replied, good, I don't want you in here. And I got him to leave. People are crazy. They didn't get video of this particular maggot. But if you display a handgun indicating your willingness to use it against someone, well, I don't know what the state law, what the decisional law is of Kansas, but it seems to me that it would be possible to brandish a handgun without removing it from the holster. Because when you display it, you indicate your willingness to use it, as opposed to putting on a mask. Jesus. But that's just one. There are, suffice to say, lots and lots of others. How about Sioux Falls, South Dakota? It was yesterday when, according to the Argus Leader newspaper, a man stood outside bellowing racial slurs and homophobic blather. People called police and called police and called police and called police. But the guy was never arrested. And police spokesman Sam Clemens, oh my goodness, please, no. Said that the police didn't respond because he was well within his rights to rant like that. Well, perhaps the words, but if he behaves in a threatening fashion that puts people in fear of receiving an immediate, unconsented to touching of an insulting or provoking nature, that is criminal conduct. Police spokescreep Sam Clemens said, what he's doing really falls under free speech, so there's really no laws that are broken. Judge for yourself. Yeah, first of all, let's note that from the video, everyone who appears in the picture, with possibly one exception, is not wearing a mask. It appears to be outdoor dining of some sort outside some kind of bar. I see the word bar. And outside the bar is hanging a pride flag. So maybe that had something to do with it.
You got water on you. That's fine.
So far, he's standing on a talking on a phone, wearing a T-shirt that says Roosevelt.
Guess what?
People standing, sitting around at tables, certainly not 6 feet distant from one another. No masks to be seen. Something, something, not a fascist. Fifth Annual Roosevelt Marching Band Clinic. He wasn't threatening anybody with a bottle. Threatening? Nobody's within 20 feet of him. Okay, 10.
With a fucking bottle! How much violence are you okay with?
What violence are we doing?
You just mocked me! Nothing. You've been so violent!
How fuck you!
Violent totalitarian Nazis.
Yeah, right. The people sitting outside not wearing masks and drinking beer are violent totalitarian Nazis. What happened is somebody threw a glass of water on him.
I'm melting. Oh, my beautiful evil.
You use violence to get your way!
Now, before all this happened, he'd been driving back and forth yelling those same epithets. And then he decided to get down on the on ground level. Oh, we know how this guy votes, don't we?
How much violence are you okay with? What do you want to do to shut people up? This is what the Nazis do.
Dude, you fucking Nazis.
No, I'm pretty sure the Nazis didn't go around throwing cups of water on people, but you know, history's fluid these days. I guess that's some of those Trumpian alternative facts.
Don't touch me! He just touched me twice!
The guy that he called the word that has all the same letters as Ginger is standing there talking to him. And he's screaming, violence, violence. Nobody's doing him any violence. The violence is happening in his petulant, petty, maggot, privileged, what passes for mind.
Getting some bullshit.
Someone go get Karen. I don't care
what I'm saying. Violence to get your way. You're dark. Violence! Mocking! You fucking get violent! Wake up, violence!
Get the fuck out of here.
Go.
Oh my God, it's somebody wearing a mask. I'm guessing they're an employee.
He doesn't have a wife. You know he's not married.
I just got back from Florida yesterday. It's my birthday Saturday.
I have freedom.
I just got out of Lucky's. They was like, yo, this is a racist dude. I said, where? I said, what's wrong? What happened?
What about your hate for me? Your hate special. You can find your violence and hatred. It's super cool. It's super cool because you look cool in your bedroom. You got cell phones. Your violence is super cool.
Yet, meanwhile, he's spewing viral particles, very likely, for all he's worth. Because he, like all the other maggots, are vectors. I want to know about that band camp t-shirt he's wearing. Fifth annual Roosevelt Marching Band Camp. Now, he's old enough to be an instructor, a teacher. He's certainly not 5 years beyond being a kid in a marching band. Maybe someone could find out. And while Sam Clemens had said he was within his rights to ruin people's afternoons peaceably trying to not social distance and enjoy a beer in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. He also has a history of engaging in this kind of behavior with the local constabulary, so they just let him go ahead and fuck up people's days. Because why not? Sure. And then, well, let's go to Canyon Country, California, where a bunch of white folks decided that they objected to the sale of fruit.
Aquí nomás vendiendo fruta y la gente acá quiere venir a alegar.
Yeah, it's illegal.
Okay, but it's not hurting anyone, man.
Get it the fuck out here. This isn't for climate. It looks like
all
shit.
But look at the way that you're coming at people, bro.
Don't call me bro. I'm not your bro.
I wish you were. I wish we were all friends. But that's hard for some people to understand. Why?
It needs to fucking go.
Like, why are you cussing, man? All right, you call the police?
Yes.
Get out of here. You don't need to be here anymore. Call the police. Get out of here. That's exactly how we feel, man. We're just seeing,
it
look,
needs to fucking go.
Who's nervous? Who's nervous?
I'm not nervous.
All right, then, bro. Go in
I'm
there
nervous
and relax,
about
bro.
Shit.
It Why you gotta to come go. Out here and make everyone's life so hard?
The guy sets up a fruit stand to sell fruit. when the white lady shows up and tells the man, simply because he's Hispanic, that it's illegal for him to sell fruit because he's from Mexico. The lady said we couldn't sell because we didn't pay taxes and because we were from Mexico. They're bar owners. Renee McAlanis and Mike Foster, owners of Burgie's Bar and Grill. And they came way out into the parking lot to give shit to a guy with a fruit stand. Jesus. Ralph, serving as the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department, has found us the Roosevelt High School, Band. Trying to figure out where they're from. Apparently, Seattle. I don't know. Seattle seems an awful long way from Sioux Falls, South Dakota. So, let's see. Fruit stands. Things the maggots cannot tolerate. Fruit stands. People drinking beer. What else? Defending your kid against a racist attack. Torrance, California. The Staybridge Suites there. Where a guy named Dennis Aaron Wyman was berating a group of young adults. This took place a couple of weeks back. One of the young men, 23 years old, got on the phone and called his dad because his dad worked as an armed security guard not too far away. So dad rolls up to see what's going on. And Dennis Aaron Wyman is still running his mouth. He'd gotten into his vehicle by then. And seeing the young man's father, he aimed his vehicle at him as Dennis Aaron Wyman allegedly propelled his vehicle toward the man. Dennis Aaron Wyman is from Redondo Beach, California, and he drove his Chevy El Camino at the father, who, even though he got run over, managed to fire multiple rounds into the vehicle. The car still hit him, though. Broke bones in his lower extremities. And then the 42-year-old attempted murderer fled the scene. Finally, on July 8th, he was taken into custody. Last Friday, he got two counts hung on him of assault with a deadly weapon and one count of hit-and-run driving, resulting in serious injury to another person. Under California law, they carry hate crime enhancements. The father of the young man who tried to defend his son is expected to recover from his injuries. Curiously, even though he's trained with the use of a handgun, he was unsuccessful in trying to stop the attack. Across the country, in New York, there was a Black Lives Matter rally. And toward the end of the the root of March, a white guy came out of his house screaming vulgarities, trying to incite the group to some sort of action, and then hollered, "Marvelline, get my gun!" All this from WNYT-TV. Well, Marvelline went and got her gun, or his gun, because, you know, she does what her husband tells her to do. The mayor of Hudson, New York, Kamal Johnson, was among the marchers and said Marlene came back outside and started brandishing the firearm. The state police were on hand to accompany the marchers, I guess for exactly this sort of reason. They followed they followed the woman into the house and came back out with a gun. Curiously enough, even though they had evinced a willingness to use firearms to coerce behavior, when they were put inside the patrol car, they weren't handcuffed. And then the mayor asked the cops why they weren't being charged with anything, like brandishing. And the cop wouldn't answer. Charges have been pressed. Activist Lukey Forbes said, "We also had several videos and pictures delivered to the police officers, and yet they tell us they're still doing an investigation." I don't know. Maybe they're checking. Maybe they're checking their the couple's bank accounts. Both Sparky and Irwin, who knows the countryside around there, spent much time in Sioux Falls. I wasn't familiar with the Roosevelt Marching Band. Teddy Roosevelt did live in North Dakota, but from Google, in Washington State. But Sparky found it. Sioux Falls Roosevelt High School Band. I can't say for sure, but the director of the Roosevelt High School Marching Band is Michael Hench. And there does appear to be, although I cannot say with any definitiveness, a resemblance. Yeah. Yeah. Billable Rick says, "I miss Jerry Springer. With all these viral videos of people behaving badly, like the Kayleys at Trader Joe's, the Jennifers at construction sites, and Feed 'em for Tech and Daryls who want to defeat COVID-19 with their goons, I miss the civility regularly on display on the Jerry Springer Show during the 1990s and early 2000s. Jerry Beads! Jerry Beads! Where have you gone, Jerry Springer? Our nation turns its lonely eyes to you. Woo, woo, woo. What's that you say, Mrs. Robinson? Swinging Springer's left and gone away. Hey, hey, hey. Hey, hey, hey." The cowbell's for Rick, not my singing. Definitely not my singing. Oh, thank you, Dave, number 11. Dave said, given the fundraising goal for this evening, he will match the 35 bucks that come in, and that'll take care of fundraising for this evening. Thank you, Dave. That's awesome. So if there's 35 bucks out there laying around, 5 at 7, 7 at 5, 1 at 35, 2 at 1750, 4 at, oh dear God, 875, whatever, Dave will double the 35 bucks that comes in, and I won't say any more about fundraising for the rest of the program, which would be flippin' awesome. As to what the police spokesman meant about not arresting the dude, Kyle in Kentucky Stan says, "What the police chief really meant was, well, he's white, so we really can't do nothing about him. I mean, at least he didn't shoot anybody that we know of or done none of that marijuana like them other people do. Then maybe we'd have shot him or something to protect our heritage." Yep, right. As to the guy in Kansas City, Kyle says, I won't ever come back here again. Well, thank you for giving me what I wanted in the first place so I can be free of your disgusting existence, maggot. God damn, I hate these people. Big credit to that guy, Kyle says, that he called that word for remaining calm in the face of that piece of shit. But seriously, that's mental illness. And says, now, Bob, you know what those maggots think of people speaking Mexican in their country. Don't blame the poor fruit. Adding, the maggots want a civil war. They'll stop at nothing till they get it. Do we all understand what's going on here? I do. They just quite haven't. They haven't. Or, well, we've been talking about a cold civil war here for years and years and years. And they hot it up every now and then, but they haven't quite organized enough. You know, the Nazis and the pustle-gutted militia members and things like that. They talk about it, but nobody wants to be the first one to step off on the march. And so far, that seems to be what's holding us together. John in PA says, Bob, I just saw a headline saying bubonic plague was found in Colorado. Evidently, it's treatable with antibiotics. Also on Sam Cedar's show, one of his contributors, Nomiki Konst, was talking about how horrible of a human being Alexander Hamilton was. I bring that up because I saw someone giving you shit about a tweet you sent out the other day saying Happy Hamilton got what he deserved day. Sorry for the poor grammar. I try. Don't worry about the grammar. I don't like Alexander Hamilton. His motives were less than stellar. And frankly, when all you have to do to avoid a duel is say, I'm sorry, and there's no duel, well, that just kind of goes to show that maybe you're not the awesome guy that you've led people to believe. All the way back to the Revolution, Hamilton was swanning around Washington's camp with all those other young men that like to buzz around him, while Burr was marching his freezing ass into Canada trying to establish a second front in the war. The Hamilton was a, yeah. And Burr made no bones about the fact that he slept around, and apparently women were into sleeping around with Aaron Burr. Hamilton, on the other hand, had a wife and like 9 dozen children. And he went sneaking and skulking around to with a guy who was pimping his own wife out. And eventually got his ass blackmailed for it. So that tells you a lot about Alexander Hamilton. Jeremy says, Billable Rick should get a cowbell for the Bob. Stop taking away easy cowbells from me. I mean, you laughed out loud at that one. Okay, fair enough, Jeremy. Kyle says, oh, Christ, the plague? Fuck you, 2020. We should at least be marginally aware that the bubonic plague pops up out west just about annually because there are just some critters out there that carry it. That's all there is to it. But it also has popped up in Mongolia as well. And, well, when in the course of this 2020 you see bubonic plague, the first thing most of us do is, well, of course, why not? Sure. Because it's 2020, the plague year. But let's not kid ourselves and get out the noisemakers and the funny hats for New Year's Eve, because 2021... well, it's still going to be with us, this thing. And we're still going to be struggling, not so much with the virus, but with the idiots who insist on spreading it. Yeah. Billable Rick says, 2020, the year of the planet-killing asteroid, as if we haven't had a Job-like year already. Oh, I know. I know. And why wouldn't it be? Yeah. Why wouldn't it? Hamilton, Stephen, New York, says, sounds like the 18th century Trump. He was a better human being than Trump, but that's a bar you can step over and not hook your platform heel on. Hamilton was, I think, a bastard, and he was born in the West Indies, and he, as a boy, got into the managing of a store, and the locals, you know, the biography says that they thought so highly of his intellect, they wanted to make sure he could get a proper education. Makes me wonder if he was maybe so obnoxious that the locals got together and paid for him to be educated somewhere the fuck else and hoped he'd stay there. But he did work. At first, he wanted to go to Princeton, Hamilton did, but then he found out that Aaron Burr had already set all the records at Princeton. Youngest graduate, highest grade point average, all of that. And since he couldn't be the absolute best, he punted and went to Columbia in Manhattan. Yeah, Flavio reminding us, just don't eat marmot sushi, okay? No marmot sashimi, no marmot ceviche, sorry, just don't. And this in from the New York Times, the Maggot administration has ordered hospitals around the country not to provide key coronavirus information to the Centers for Disease Control. Instead, they want it sent to a database in Washington that, curiously, they probably control. Chess master and vocal critic of people named Putin and people named Trump, Garry Kasparov, said, "If you cannot deny the facts, hide them. If you cannot hide the consequences, blame someone else for them. Trump would tear down the U.S. ability to fight COVID before accepting any responsibility." Yes, Garry, yes. If he cannot be God Emperor for life, he is more than welcome, or he is more than happy to burn the whole country down and take us with him. Thanks for that, David in South Carolina, Stan. Kyle says, the kind of year it's been if you told me that Marvin the Martian from Looney Tunes and all his buddies from Mars were all going to somehow come to Earth and take it over, I'd probably believe you. Oh, God, I just tempted fate, didn't I? Kyle, you got to be careful what you whisper into the ears of the universe, my friend. I mean, I made a quip about Godzilla a few weeks ago, and the next thing I see, there's a sandstorm coming across from Africa that, with no input from me, they've named the Godzilla Storm. This is no time for idle jest. A little ray of sunshine, Jeremy in Vermont says, Halley's Comet comes around every 75 years. Most of the listeners now probably saw that, but won't see its return as compared to the comet that most of us will be able to see at some point between now and September. It won't be back for 6,000 years. The last time it was here, the Egyptians were still in power. Think about all the people that won't see it. Oh, I know. I remember well, Hail Bop. Hail Bop showed up in the skies above West Virginia in 1997. And it just happened to be hanging in the sky on the night that our youngest, Doodle, was born. And while I'm not superstitious, it felt auspicious. Hail Bop was bright, and you could see it in daylight even. It was discovered in 1995, and it has an orbital period of 2,520 to 2,533 years, so I've got that going for me. That was also the comet, just as an aside. Hail Bop was the comet that so intrigued the Heaven's Gate cult. You know, if they'd only stuck around long enough, they could have been maggots. Remember them? The Heaven's Gate cult? They all wore matching tennis shoes. Several of the men had themselves castrated. And at one point in time, the Heaven's Gate cultists went out and spent some serious cult coin on a telescope. And they went back and set it up to look at Hail Bop. And they did. And they returned it. And I'm not kidding. They returned the telescope for a refund. And whoever it was that sold them the telescope asked them what was wrong. They said it was defective. And when inquired as to what the defect was, they said that it didn't work because it did not show. You know, if this wasn't something that had happened, 23 years ago, I'd say get the hockey puck. But no, really. The Heaven's Gate cultists said the telescope was defective because it didn't show them the spaceship that was trailing the comet, because they were convinced that the comet had been sent to show a spaceship how to get to Earth, and that they were going to get on the spaceship behind the comet and fly away to Happy Land. But the spaceship was not there. Yet, nonetheless, they committed suicide, which was apparently how one boarded the spaceship. You know, the spaceship that wasn't there. It's not like we haven't been warned of the potential of this country to give rise to the maggots. So you're thinking, and here I sit in West Virginia, and there's Billable Rick out in L.A. thinking the same thing. Subject line, Hail Bop. I missed my chance for interstellar travel by not meeting up with the Hail Bop comet along with the Heaven's Gate disciples. Damn it! Remember the Applewhite dude? He led that cult? Yep, and that's why I right. Scott in San Diego says, these three past years of Trump have made me sad that the end of days, Incan, Mayan prediction didn't come true back in 2012 or whenever the hell that was. Yeah, but it wasn't too long back, Scott, when I started seeing posts from people saying, you know, we may have had a rounding error in that whole Mayan calendar calculation thing. It's this year. No, really. Kyle now trying to apologize into the ear of the universe. Okay, for whatever threat to our existence that comes from another planet this year, I'm sorry, it's my fault for saying anything. LOL. Well, at least you apologized, Kyle. Right, 6,000-year-old comet. Steve in New York says, you mean it was last year when God created the world? Yep. It was last year before the tremendous upheaval of the 13th century BCE. Read up on it sometime.
Quit telling us what to read up on, Bob. Quit taking away my cheap... Quit telling us, Bob.
I can't keep up.
Quit telling us you can't keep up, Bob.
Jeremy.
Bob and Bill, stop telling us the best way for space travel with a comet and maggots.
Oh, what will the amorphous multi-limbed aliens of Norblap 9 think when they get these archives? Oh, and I saw a story last night that there's a new astronomical phenomenon never observed before. I'm not kidding when I say the shorthand term for it is ORC, O-R-C. I can't remember what it stands for. The R stands for round. And it's never been observed before. And it is not visible to infrared. Not visible to ultraviolet. Not visible to anything except radio waves. And it was discovered at the Square Radio Telescope Array somewhere in the arid wilds of Australia. And I thought, radio waves, huh? God help us if those things are sentient. Because who knows, even now, they might just now be getting the sermons of Father Coughlin. That's fun to contemplate, isn't it? Oh, and here's a quote from Dr. Fauci, courtesy of David in South Carolina, Stan. If you look at the magnitude of the 1918 pandemic, that was the mother of all pandemics and truly historic. This is a quote from Dr. Fauci. I hope we don't even approach that with this, but it does have the makings of, the possibility of, approaching that in seriousness. And the only way it does, of course, is if we, the people of the United States, having given up on that more perfect union, continue to be dumber in the head than a hog is in the ass. And for the most part, that would be people in, well, the Confederate states, plus West Virginia, plus Montana, plus Arizona. All those states being on fire. Oddly enough, according to COVID Act now, the only Confederate state, well, no, I think I'm ahead of myself. Nope. The only Confederate states that aren't red now are Arkansas, Tennessee, North Carolina, and Virginia. They've taken West Virginia off of red and we're back to gold, which means at risk. But our infection rate is still at 1.4. That means every person here in West Virginia who gets it spreads it to 1.4 other people. And that's horrifying. Now that Mississippi's turned red, well, they're at 1.14. Alabama, 1.19. Georgia, 1.21. South Carolina, Stan, 1.14. And anything above 1 means you have a problem, by the way. Florida, 1.23. Their positive test rate is 18.7%. That means they're not testing worth a damn. There are hardly any count. Almost the entirety of South Florida is blood red. And the majority of Florida counties are now in the red active or imminent outbreak zone. The remainder are in the at-risk zone. Texas is at 1.19. They also have insufficient testing at 15.9%. The terrifying part is that in Texas, their ICU headroom is at 91% and some individualized areas, 100%. Meanwhile, the entire state of Florida, is at 100% of ICU headroom used. That is that horror mark. And at what point in time, then again, you know, when the whole state's getting sick, how do you demand accountability from a malignant thing like white supremacist adjacent illegitimate Florida governor Ron Monkey Up DeClantis, who only became governor with the assistance of real live, no kidding, Nazi robocalls? How do you do that? Because I don't have an answer. The only states in the union on track to contain COVID are New Hampshire, Vermont, and New Jersey. Congratulations to those three states. What about Montana, Bob? Oh, Montana is vying with West Virginia for we're number one. We're number one because their infection rate is 1.40 as well. And just as is the case with West Virginia, Montana is not doing shit's worth to contact trace. Well, if Dr. Fauci's nightmare vision proves true, it will be because of Brian Kemp's and the Greg Abbott's and the Ron Monkey Up DeClantis's, the McGubners, and the Governor Meemaw's, and Colonel Governor Taint Reeves, and the Governor Douchey's, and the Governor Asa Hutchinson's, all of whom are bioterrorists trying to weaponize the virus so that hopefully they will make Nitwit Nero smile. Hey, thank you to Laborman. Laborman just jumped in and met Dave's challenge. Thank you very kindly. That concludes fundraising for this here Trump-tanic Tuesday. We've completed 2 hours of the program. Let's take a little break, because it is a Tuesday, and I do sincerely enjoy the Green News Report. Let's see what Brad and Desi have on tap for us.
It's Tuesday, July 14, 2020.
We've got a lot of heat and humidity to talk about.
Extended extreme heat wave spreads across U.S. June 2020, second hottest June ever recorded. Bankrupt oil and gas companies leave taxpayers with the cleanup bill. Plus,
Donald Trump ignored expert warnings about coronavirus. On climate, he won't listen to scientists or the military.
Environmental group hits Trump on COVID and climate denial.
All of that catastrophic denial and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
It's time to talk about Donald J. Trump.
Are you okay, Congressman? Are you all right?
Yep.
Okay, you sure?
Okay.
Okay. Gosh, Congressman Glenn Grothman, maybe you shouldn't have gone to that Republican in-person state convention in Wisconsin. Hope you ain't got the COVID. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, it's not only hot out there, it's record hot out there.
Oh, yes, indeed it is. First up, June 2020 was the second hottest June ever recorded globally, second only to June 2016. That's according to new data from both NASA and NOAA. And the last 12 months are now tied for the warmest 12-month period since record-keeping began in the mid-1800s. That is according to the European Union's climate monitoring service, Copernicus. 2020 so far is already on track to be the second warmest year ever recorded and has brought scorching new records in both the Arctic and the Antarctic. And just note that this record warmth is happening in the absence of an El Nino weather pattern in the Pacific Ocean that normally boosts global temperatures.
Was there an El Nino back in 2016, the record year?
Yes, it was a super El Nino.
And now we're hitting these records without any help.
Yep. An extreme heat wave is also baking the southern half of the nation. The National Weather Service has issued excessive heat warnings and heat advisories this week, covering 50 million Americans from Southern California to Florida. Death Valley, California hit a searing 128 degrees Fahrenheit on Sunday. That is just 1 degree shy of the hottest temperature ever recorded on the entire planet, which was just 2 years ago in Pakistan. While intense heat waves of this magnitude are not unheard of in summer, climate scientists warn that they will become increasingly more frequent in the years ahead due to man-made climate change. Meteorologists warn that this heat wave could last multiple weeks in some regions.
Great.
Prolonged exposure to the heat increases the odds of heat-related deaths, so officials around the country are trying to safely open cooling centers in affected states, even as the coronavirus pandemic surges across the country.
Yeah, how are we supposed to have cooling centers where everybody comes into a room together to cool down?
That's what they're trying to figure out.
That sounds like a terrible idea.
In other news, remember when oil prices for U.S. crude briefly crashed below zero back in April?
So low that they were actually paying people to take the oil off their hands.
Yep, now it is July, and the benchmark price for crude is still hovering around $40 a barrel due to lack of demand, and that is still beneath the break-even price for many in the fracking industry in the United States. The New York Times reports that the drilling and fracking industry is now facing a wave of bankruptcies and are abandoning unprofitable wells, leaving behind potential environmental disasters for U.S. taxpayers to pay the cleanup bill, even as CEOs walk off with million-dollar bonuses.
Once again, privatizing the profits, socializing the losses.
Yep, just one example in the New York Times. Bankrupt Texas oil producer MDC Energy's abandoned wells are leaking climate-warming methane. It would require an estimated $40 million to clean up and shutter those wells, but the company's debts exceed the value of its assets by more than $180 million.
So they're out of business. They're not going to clean it up. We're going to clean it up.
Right. But the company did find the money to pay its CEO more than $8 million in fees.
Oh, good. That's at least that happened.
In politics, venerable nonprofit environmental group the League of Conservation Voters has launched a multi-million dollar ad campaign in six swing states, slamming Donald Trump's anti-science attacks on the environment and public health.
For months, Donald Trump ignored warnings from public health experts about the coronavirus pandemic, and his denial turned deadly. He refuses to listen to NASA, scientists, and the military about climate change and its damage to our homes, environment, and national security.
A lot of it's a hoax. It's a hoax. It's a hoax.
Well, I'm glad they've turned that into an ad. We've been saying that here for weeks, that his denial of COVID and the Republicans' denial of COVID is really exactly like that for climate change, just compressed into a few months instead of, at this point, several decades.
Yep.
It's appalling and, yes, deadly. For much more on all of these reports and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Science is real.
Darn, I had that Glenn Grothman audio all ready to go, but well, you heard it there first. You okay, Glenn?
No, I'm great.
Yeah. And by the way, in responding to the challenge, I had a note from Laborman. Let me make sure I get to that. Sorry I missed the party, Laborman says. I'll do a $35 challenge for our darling Darlene's birthday. Darlene, happy birthday, and thanks for all you do for this community. Signed, Gary. Thanks, Gary. Thank you, Darlene. You really inspired people. And so Dave had a challenge. Laborman has a challenge. And now there's another $35 to be raised. Thank you, Laborman. Thank you, Dave, number 11. And thank you, Darlene. And it looks like you're getting a two-day birthday. So that's cool. And thank you, Ralphs, for jumping in. That's 25 to go on Laborman's challenge. So thank you. Thank you, Ralphs. Thank you, Laborman. Thank you, Dave. And thank you, Darlene. Okay, I've still got oodles and oodles of weird. Let me just get this one out of the way, because it fits with the overall theme of this here particular Trump-tanic Tuesday. First, we had the asshole in Mission, Kansas. And is that the same? Has the Shawnee been taken off of Shawnee Mission as a result of, not slurring Native people, or is there just another place called Mission, Kansas that isn't Shawnee Mission? I don't know. I'm certainly in favor if they took the Shawnee off of it, because Shawnee Mission sounds a hell of a lot like they were trying to convert the locals, which they probably were. But that was the barbecue joint. This here story comes out of Albuquerque, where you take the wrong train on the way to Pismo Beach. Cody Westfall works at a pet store there in Albuquerque. And this looks like a trend now. A maggot walked into the pet store because, well, he's such a patriot and a hero and a maggot that he can't go to the pet store without packing heat. So he walks in carrying his gun. The clerk says, would you please put on a mask? We have a mask order here. And the clerk at the pet store said at that point he stopped and kind of turned around to me and asked, are you going to make me wear a mask? Well, I mentioned that not only is it a personal preference for our store, but as of yesterday, it's now governmental mandated. He looked down and then he looked back up and said, are you sure you're going to make me wear a mask? And young Cody Westfall, I assume young, I don't know, said he knew then that it had gotten bad, because he was threatened not once but twice. And as soon as the man left the store, he called the police. Now that's Kansas, that's the greater Kansas City area and Albuquerque. What are the odds that two gun-toting maggots have the same idea in the short space of a week? You can almost hear the bad Clint Eastwood impression. Are you going to make me wear a mask? Well, are you, punk? Are you really going to make me wear a mask? Are you sure You're going to make me wear a mask. And what do you do? You're going to get shot by you're going to get shot by a COVIDiot mask hole maggot for minimum wage. Holy fuck. Over and over and over again. I know it's over the top to say, where is this going to take us? But Jesus. And now so it's happened twice. You know, first it was the Karens with their exemption cards. Now the menfolk are going to, since the exemption cards aren't working, they're going to see if people are brave enough to make them wear a mask when they're displaying their freedom protector. And what happens when somebody reaches under the counter and pulls out a double-barreled shotgun and points it at their chest and say, yeah, I'm going to make you wear a mask. Draw, motherfucker. You're going to lose. You think that couldn't happen in this country? It could happen in this country. Albuquerque. And Michigan. Oh, yeah. Carl Nelson, by the way, if you're in Michigan, you don't want to eat at the Carl Nelson-owned Pronto Pup franchise. He went on, naturally, because, I don't know, you just get your fill of Pronto Pups, and once upon a time, Pronto Pups were really, really good corn dogs. Maybe they still are. But he's got him a Pronto Pup franchise, cash only. And Carl Nelson, I guess, got a belly full of Pronto Pups, and maybe something a little bit more potent in the way of potables. And decided to go online and unburden himself. Among other things, he said that he compared the media. I mean, we know how this guy votes too. He compared the media to Adolf Hitler, and said that the Michigan militia is just something fantastic, and denounced Black Lives Matter. This particular Pronto Pup, according to Michigan Live, M Live, is along the boardwalk in Grand Haven, Michigan. And Carl Nelson, his screed was some 1,200 words that began by fixating on a mask requirement, of course. Establishing his credentials as a mask hole. Saying something along the lines of, I can't work indoors slaving over hot oil in a little space while I'm wearing a mask. Wrong accent, I know. But I'm going to keep Pronto Pup open to make sure my employees keep employed. Then he said that the pandemic is 100% political.
100% political. And it's no difference from the common cold.
Not nearly nasal enough, but I'm working on it. Said the media are controlling the narrative about the virus.
Good job, Hitler.
went on to declare that there's no such thing as white privilege, that the Black Lives Matter movement has absolutely nothing to do with racism. And if he could, he'd paint White Lives Matter down the street there in Grand Haven. And then he just went straight up to the call for violence.
I believe it will take firepower, period. I am curious of the Michigan militia's stand on this act of treason that Michigan's governor is putting us through. Maybe I run for president of the militia.
And then he got caught. Because there was another post. Because he put it on the Pronto Pup Facebook page, which is apparently still a going concern. My lovely wife has fond memories of the Pronto Pup stand at Camden Park in Huntington, West Virginia, where her beloved grandmother once worked. Pronto Pup got wind of it. And so, bang, it got disappeared. And the following appeared. There was a post meant for the owner's personal account that was accidentally posted to this page tonight. We have removed it, as it was not intended to be a Pronto Pup post. This post was in no way representative of Pronto Pup as a business or our staff members. We're not sure how to make this right at the moment, but we'll try to figure it out. We're truly sorry for any hurt or offense this has caused. And then the page gets deactivated. Adventures in social media. And Carl Nelson comes back with another post.
As the deterioration of our nation and freedoms as we have enjoyed over the decades begin to dwindle away, I snapped. My sincere apologies to anyone that may have seen the post.
Yeah. Meanwhile, another Pronto Pup food truck posted,
just as a friendly reminder, we want to make sure everyone knows we are in no way affiliated with any other Pronto Pup restaurant or food truck, especially not Carl Nelson's.
And in their own reporting, MLive says, MLive has previously described Pronto Pups as a Grand Haven icon. Yeah. It's been there since on the edge of Grand River since 1947. And in warm months, the line stretches down the block for what you and I would recognize as a corn dog. And now, if bad thing, you know, if people like stop going there, or if business fails or whatever, I'm sure there'll be some neo maxi Zoom dweeby who declares that, you know, while clutching pearls and wringing hands, cancel culture has gotten completely out of control. We've got to make room at the table for these racists and assholes, because all of our dialogues have value. Oh, and I saw something earlier. Barry Weiss, a horrible human being, has apparently resigned from the New York Times editorial board. If only she would take Brett Stevens with her. Yeah. Well, let's run over and check in with Scott. What's happening, Scott?
Hey, Bob, I usually avoid calling 2 days in a row. But
the spirit moved you.
I was moved. Say hallelujah. You made reference to either Shawnee or Shawnee Mission or Mission in Kansas, but I was on the phone, so I missed whatever dateline story occurred there. There is a Shawnee. There is a Mission. Let's see, I got a list here. There's a Mission Hills, there's a Shawnee. And I think Shawnee Mission is like a neighborhood. These are all in suburban Kansas, outside of Kansas City.
And generally speaking, well-to-do.
Oh, yeah. Johnson County is probably the highest per capita income zip code in the entire state of Kansas. And it's as far
and
it's as
not a particularly it's not a particularly small county. In fact, some might say that it's big Johnson County.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to award myself a preemptive cowbell for that.
Kind of. You should. You should. I lived in Kansas City for the better part of the 1980s, and I very seldom would venture into Kansas because it was laid out differently. Both Johnson County and I think Wyandotte County were the city of Kansas City, Kansas is. See, it gets very confusing. And I also didn't venture north of the river, north of the Missouri River, because the North Kansas City was laid out, to my mind, in a cattywampus way. You know, that was just, as a matter of fact, I knew some folks who lived at Cattywampus Way, right there in the middle of the block. But anyway, that's not why I called. It occurred to me last night, and in listening to you describe and mention all of the states where the COVID pandemic is just skyrocketing, but it occurred to me last night as I was sitting watching the coverage of this thing that these southern states and these Midwestern states and even some of these East Coast and West Coast states, hell, the whole fucking country, something occurs in the autumn when the leaves begin to turn and the weather gets crisp, that is sort of a uniting factor no matter where you live in the country, more often than not. Do you recall what that uniting factor is, usually on a Friday night under lights? I'm giving you broad hints here, Bob. High school football.
Right, and see, I didn't have a broad here, so... It...
Okay. Where's
okay.
Agnes?
Going to hell for that one.
Is she a broad? Is Agnes a broad or a dame? No, hell no. She's a lady, God damn it. She's a lady. Anyway.
None of that.
It occurred to me last night that a good chunk of this country has a tradition that occurs on Friday night in stadia all over the country under the bright lights, and that is Friday night football. And all of these COVID-19 naysayers and deniers and Trumper tunists if they know football, they should be able to get their minds around COVID-19. In football, you've got the home team and you've got the visiting team. You got the good guys and the bad guys. You got the folks in the stands going rah rah, and you got the folks in the stands going boo hiss. Okay? You've got offense and you've got defense in Friday night football at high school stadia all over the country. You've got points on the board. There's a big, at the end of the field, there's a big, well lit, advertising laden scoreboard.
Oh, sure.
And with a glance, you can tell just with the in the quickening of a blink what the fucking score is. Now, what do we know so far? A good chunk of the country knows about football on Friday nights under the lights. They know about offense. They know about defense. They know about the home team, and they know about the visiting team, and they know about points on the board. Isn't there some analogy? Isn't there? Shouldn't a penny drop with these people? And if it's not dropping and they don't fucking get it, then something willful is occurring to cause them to pretend otherwise. Am I off base here, or am I pretty much...
No, I mean, I think you are, if we're talking about a rational, reasonable country.
Well, yeah. That's
we aren't.
My assumption.
We aren't, you know. And don't forget, they don't just play it in high school, they play it in college. And for instance, up in the greater Boston area, there's a cheer, you know, when MIT's losing 72-0. The student body begins to chant MIT, PhD, M-O-N-E-Y.
Yeah. You'd think with all them slide rules that they could figure out plays better. But you'd be wrong, wouldn't you, Bob?
Well, it's hard to play football when you gotta have pocket protectors sewn onto your uniform. Oh God, I'm going to hell for that one too. Stereotypes.
But it kind of occurred to me, Bob, that except for willful blindness, people should get this. I mean, because.
But no, Scott, they don't.
I know.
And I'm not trying to be short. They don't. And the reason they don't is because they don't wanna. Okay.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
There's a meme that's been making the rounds. A statue of a crying toddler, just standing with its fist balled up and its eyes squinted shut, just bawling. And that's the that's purported to be the memorial statue that we will put up to all the mask holes. Babies.
Gratitude.
Babies.
Yeah.
And this is the toxicity of cognitive dissonance coming in contact with confirmation bias. No amount of facts, figures, reason, logic, none of that is going to convince them that COVID-19 is real and that masking works, because, well, they've seen something on YouTube. They found something, they Googled it, and they done found out. And it's the exact same thing as what I was talking about with the Heaven's Gate assholes.
Oh, God, well, that all happened out here.
But the fact that the spaceship was not visible in the telescope was not proof to them that there was no spaceship. It was proof to them that there was something wrong with the telescope.
Yeah. Hence the request for the refund. Yeah. Exactly. Well, and maybe it's a valid point, but they will choose not to get it. But I was thinking in terms of, if you're sitting down visiting with a friend or an associate who happens to buy into the bullshit of Trump, okay, that if you were to try to just have a one-on-one conversation with someone and say, look, Fred or Jane or Jim or whoever, you go to the game back when we could have games.
Yeah, but you're still trying to convince people who refuse to be convinced, Scott. I know you're the horns resident optimist.
But get what I'm saying. That it's not that these people are stupid.
Oh, they're some obstinate. Are. Please.
Well, yeah. Okay, some of them are. But I choose to have friends who are not stupid. So I'm sitting there talking to Jim or Jane or John or whoever, and I know that he misses his Friday night game because we're not going to have him come autumn. We're not going to have a lot of nice things come autumn. But certainly it should register that if he can understand the dynamics of football, certainly he can get his mind around this. And if he's not doing it, there's a reason for him not doing it, and that is a willful obstinance and ignorance on his or her part. That's all I'm saying.
Well, you've got an observation coming from Lee in New York.
Okay.
Scott's football analogy. Scott should also be aware that those fans have superstitions. A fan will believe that a piece of clothing has the magic of bringing victory to the home team. Where it happens
sucks.
By spinning, touching an item in the home, walking a particular way. Football is an analogy? Correct. But because of the denial of facts, not the support of it.
Well, I get that. Believe me, I hadn't even considered.
But I think there's value in the topic that you raised, Scott, beyond exemplary value the football analogy itself has, and that is football itself. There are places in this country, and I live in one of them. Texas is definitely one of them.
Oh yeah,
the entire Florida, Confederate too. South, Florida.
Yeah.
The numbers of Division I quality football players that come out of the little state of Louisiana is astonishing. And you've got we're just talking high school. You factor in college. You know, there's no pro football team in Alabama. They who wants one? They got Alabama and Auburn.
Oh yeah.
Okay. And people are sweating bullets, wondering how we're gonna pack those SEC stadiums, the vast majority of which hold 100,000 people plus. There's a race for stadium capacity in the SEC that is like unto the nuclear arms race between the United States and the Soviets.
Riding on it, Bob. The income that the school gets.
Sure, but it's also bragging rights. We got the biggest stadium in the SEC.
It's a religion.
We get to look down on them Yankee schools. At the Ohio State University and at the University of Michigan. They think they got big stadiums. We got big stadiums. Damn, look here at General Neyland Stadium in Tennessee and Florida Field there in Gainesville. And daggummit, used to be Bryant-Denny Stadium was so little that the University of Alabama wouldn't play no football in their own stadium because it was the pissant. They went all the way to Birmingham playing Legion Field.
Yeah.
But by God, not no more. It's as big as the rest of them. And Jesus, I've been to a game in Tiger Stadium in Baton Rouge. I've climbed smaller mountains in West Virginia than getting up to the nosebleed section in that place. And yeah. It is a source of genuine consternation. What is Crimson Tide Nation going to do if they don't get to hear every Saturday, hello Crimson Tide fans, I'm Eli Gold, Roll Tide. What are they going to do?
Yeah, well, what are they going to do?
Riot in the streets? Contemplate suicide? As an aside, Nitwit Nero decided to talk football today, and he changed the head coach of the University of Alabama.
Uh-oh. That's serious business.
Which will not be well received. He declared on a number of occasions that the head coach of the University of Alabama is Lou Saban, not Nick. Lou, I think, was Nick's dad.
Yeah, I believe you're right.
And in fact, he was a head coach or an assistant coach or something like that when Nick was a little boy growing up in West Virginia. And then Lou went on to coach up at, I guess, Michigan State, maybe. But the problem is football, I mean, the piety of the Bible Belt is legendary. But the fact of the matter is, for a lot of people, yeah, it's important to be in church on Sunday, but on Saturday, by God, you either be in the stadium, or you be by radio, or you be in front of the TV.
Yeah.
Because that's every bit as important. And if they don't have that, little else matters. That's just the South. I mean, Big Ten fans, you know.
Oh, yeah. It won't dawn on them when the stadium is boarded up, when the TV station is showing infomercials, or when the radio is playing, you know, the top 40 countdown come one of these autumn weekends. It won't dawn on them why they don't get to have their fun.
Well, and that's the point I'm trying to reach, Scott.
I'm sorry. Within the
universe of this question of the pandemic and what it's doing, what it's done to us, and what it's going to keep doing to us, you have got to factor in that weeks ago, for instance, the University of South Carolina nobody licks our cocks. those are T-shirts.
Yes, I had a mouthful of coffee. Bob,
South Carolina, South Carolina Gamecocks. They announced that there will, by God, be football in the fall, or else the entire state of South Carolina may go all heaven's gate. But what you've got to take into consideration is that part of the school's reopening argument,
yeah,
isn't just the K-12 public schools, it's colleges. And it is the multi-billion-dollar industry that is college football, fueled by unpaid labor.
Yeah.
And so the goal is to figure out how we can pack those stadiums. And they will try. And if they are not able to pack those stadiums, there will be hell to pay. I mean, you think not wanting to wear a mask is bad? Wait till you see a Crimson Tide fan who's had his or her football season taken away. Hell, I mean, the West Virginia University is the most successful major college football program in the history of the game that has never won a national championship. Never. And we're going to be upset. And, you know, our season's going to mostly entail, getting our asses kicked at home and going somewhere else and getting our asses kicked. Because we're in a declining phase right now. And people here are going to be hot. Now, you take those college Saturdays and you add to them all those myriad Friday nights. You think they're going to social distance in a local high school football stadium?
Oh, hell no.
You think they're going to go to the trouble of putting up plastic shields between the public and people serving them their pronto pups and their hot dogs and their nachos and their chili dogs and their popcorn? No. I mean, so what I'm trying to get to here, Scott, is just how much danger we're not in yet. How much more danger is still to come. And yeah. It is a lot.
Yeah, it's not going to be, it's already showing signs of people's nerves and emotions being frayed and on edge. Just in the examples that you gave at the pet shop and the one that I didn't hear in the Kansas City area in suburban Kansas, and just so on down the line that we hear in media every day, it's going to get much worse before it even has a chance, if it can, to get any better. And it's going to be ugly in ways that we've never seen before. Because there's a cumulative effect, isn't there? It's a layer cake of madness.
Well, it's that old shampoo commercial we've discussed in the past. I told someone, and she told someone, and she told someone, and so on, and so on, and so on.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's no way to ride herd never mind a medical, a pandemic breakout, okay? Never mind that. It's bad enough to have the virus running rampant. But when you've got the people who've been affected by the conditions created by the virus running rampant, and plus they're not always too bright, okay? They're heavily armed. They are not well informed on top of being heavily armed and not, you know, natively bright. Well, it's a recipe for just utter chaos.
Yes.
You know, it's and there's nothing to compare it to. We've never really had that. I mean, we've had glimpses and hints, you know, isolated over the history of this country. But we've never seen it go full tilt boogie before. You know, a 15-layer bean dip with enchilada sauce and God knows what else on it is going to be set before us. And it's going to be on the floor and the ceiling and the people. And there's going to be body bags before this is over, above and beyond the victims of the virus. That's what you're getting at. That's what we're both getting at.
Well, Silent R. Lamar has a take. He says, call me. I know the answer. The answers to Scott's question is they can't be wrong. And so in order not to be wrong, they won't listen. The la 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 la, can't hear you, la 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 la.
Yeah. But it's going to ratchet up even worse than that, because the la 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 will only carry you so far. At some point, somebody is going to say to somebody else, well, I'm afraid I'm going to have to shoot you. You know? I mean, I make light of it, because you almost have to laugh to keep from weeping bitterly at the state, the possible state, and the current state of things in this country. You know.
Yeah. And Fauci says, you know, there's a possibility it could get as bad as the 1918 pandemic. James in Illinois just wrote in and said, nothing to compare it to. Try the medieval plagues of Europe. Well, I've talked about that on this program. And, you know, the medieval plagues were of the mid 14th century in particular, that wiped out somewhere between a third and a half of the population of Europe, was, you know, it was as bad as it was, A, because of ignorance. They didn't understand germ theory. They didn't have germ theory. It's not that they... And B, it was a very dirty time. So it would be difficult for this thing to reach the point that it wiped out 165 million people in this country. That would be half of the population, roughly. But God Almighty, Scott, we're past the point at which 1% of the population has it.
Yeah.
And there are here, let me run over to COVID Act Now real quick. Just to see, because I keep looking at the on fire states, and I'm not so prone to looking at the on track to contain it states. Let's look at New Jersey, populous state, right? Well, their risk level is down because their infection rate is at 0.84, and they're testing so widespread that their positive test rate is 1.3%. And they are at 100% contact tracing. So, importantly, that infection rate, well, it used to be called the R number.
Yeah.
At 0.84 means that if a person gets it, each person is not giving it to one more person. Each person who has it is spreading it to less than one more person, which means that mathematically it will eventually diminish and theoretically die out.
Yeah, that's where we want to be.
But there's only three states that have that.
Yeah.
New Jersey being the most populous. New Hampshire, where the radio lady was last night. That's no lady.
Yeah, looking for work.
Yeah, looking for work now.
Beating the bushes, looking for work.
Looking for maybe, I was thinking I might like to get a construction job there. Too bad I was berating those Mexicans.
Yeah, Amway looks pretty good.
In New Hampshire, the infection rate's 0.88, and they've got 100% contact tracing. Vermont, where Jeremy is, 0.87, and a positive test rate of 0.9%, which means that apparently they test you if you turn around. And they're at 100% contact tracing. Contact tracing is the key to it. Meanwhile, just to look at Florida, Florida has the problems it has because Florida has traced only 3%.
Yeah.
And in point of fact, the best available data, according to COVID Act now, says that there are 1,600 contact tracers in Florida. When you consider the number of people out of work in Florida, most of them ought to be working as contact tracers. So there's an average of 9,957 new cases daily in Florida. The folks at COVID Act now say that that means that Florida needs 49,785 contact tracers to trace all the new cases in 48 hours and slow the reinfection. Well, under Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis, that's not going to happen. So Florida is just going to have to burn because Floridians won't go and drag him out of the governor's mansion. Not saying they should, I'm just saying that they won't. Huge state, contact tracers in Texas, 6%. Texas needs 45,300 contact tracers. They have 2,800. Arizona. Arizona has 396 contact tracers. They need 17,415 of them.
Jeez.
So Arizona's going to keep burning. Texas is going to keep burning. Florida's going to keep burning. And it's not going to burn itself out. Because there will be new people to be infected. And actually, I had a story, Scott, from the Florida Sun-Sentinel. South Florida Sun-Sentinel. Headline: Pandemic parties rage on across South Florida despite growing coronavirus crisis.
Even now as we speak, they're continuing to be stupid.
There's a $6 million waterfront mansion in Miami Beach. Code enforcers were called there 43 times. The police were called 18 times.
Jesus.
The Miami Police Department, just the Miami PD, has, and this story is from 4 days ago, just the Miami PD has responded to 11 pandemic parties recently. Five of them in June. One July 4th bash, the organizers were proud to say that they got away with it. A warehouse rave. I don't know if that's a typo.
I think it's rave.
And the police didn't know nothing about it. And 250 people partied the night away. Florida does not want to interfere with the spread of the disease. Flavio just asked me, what about Wisconsin? Their infection rate is at 1.19. They're still getting sicker. And they are going to continue to get sicker because they need 3,670 contact tracers and they have 600.
Missouri, this is good.
Missouri, every person infects 1.2 other people. And Missouri has 94 contact tracers. And they need 2,860. Missouri's going to continue to burn. The boot heel's burning, the St. Louis area's burning, and the Kansas City area is burning.
Yeah, it And all of this could have been properly addressed if we had had actual leadership in our national government.
Well, sometimes in our country, we need national responses. I mean, just as an example, Scott, let's say World War II. Well, the Trump approach to the coronavirus, if it was applied to World War II, would have been to say, well, good luck fighting the Third Reich, Rhode Island. You're on your own. Because we have what we have here because there is no formal federal overarching presence. And instead, 50 petty fiefdoms are trying to come up with however they want to respond to it based on any number of motives, which in the maggot states, for the most part, have nothing to do with stopping the spread of the disease. And we got to save the economy.
And don't they see, Bob, that in order to preserve the precious economy, you can't have people sick and dying all over the goddamn place.
No people, no economy.
Yeah. I mean,
North Carolina's in the gold. They're at risk, but they are not in an outbreak. North Carolina has 1,500 contact tracers. Hey, good. Unfortunately, they need 9,085. And I keep looking just because, you know, I got that beach urge going on.
Yeah, Myrtle Beach.
No, I keep looking at the Outer Banks. And there it is, Dare County, North Carolina. At one point in time, they were actually green. Well, now they're red. Their infection rate is higher than West in the county itself. Their infection rate is higher than West Virginia's statewide. They're at 1.59.
Do you have
which
Delaware?
Is huge.
Do you have Delaware handy?
I can.
Would you? Because I have a reason for my asking.
Is that where one of your brothers is?
Well, let me tell you the story. All through the 70s, every summer, my folks would rent a cottage at a little place just over the Maryland line in Delaware called Fenwick Island. And my younger brother, even though he lives in Florida, where there are beaches as far as you can see, every year still goes up to Fenwick from his spot in Florida, okay?
I understand that.
When I was talking to my older brother the other night, well, last week, he was saying that younger brother had told him that he was on his way. He texted him or something. Or no, he dropped by on his way up, going through D.C. on the way to Delaware. And that's where he apparently is right now as we speak. So I was just kind of curious what the medical situation is for southern Delaware.
Well, overall, the state's infection rate is 1.09, so they're making progress.
Yeah.
But overall, statewide, they need 485 contact tracers and have 116. Now, that particular county you're talking about, if you say it's just over the Maryland line...
Yeah, it's as far south as you can go in Delaware.
Yeah, that's Sussex County.
Okay.
They're at 1.11, and there isn't even any data on contact tracing in that county.
Yeah. Well, and part of the reason, I guess, is that the natives, the people who are there year-round, it's just a handful of people, because Delaware is a small state anyway, but there's a lot of tourism. You know, in Ocean City, Maryland, and Fenwick, and up north a little further in Rehoboth Beach, and
sure,
you know, God damn, I don't know, man. There was
Alabama needs 6,880 contact tracers; they have 150, and Mobile County has turned red. Baldwin County is dark orange, at risk. And those are the two. Those are the two counties that surround Mobile Bay and give you access either to Dauphin Island or Gulf Shores. And I have it on good authority from someone in Alabama that the reason Alabama's cases are going up, especially in Mobile County, is because of all them Yankees that couldn't stay home and come down and ruin our beach. God's honest truth, I wish I was lying.
What, no, when they say Yankees, who are they talking about? Because that seems to be a pretty far way to travel. I mean, if you're going,
oh no, if you're in the Midwest, if you're in Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Gulf Shores is probably the nearest beach to you.
Well, that's
and
true.
So it's not unusual to see cars from above the corn pone curtain. Down there. But the fact of the matter is, they got what they got because they went and they partied their little brains out over Memorial Day weekend, and they've kept on partying. And I'm pretty sure that all those people there didn't have Ohio or Indiana or Illinois or Michigan or Wisconsin, Minnesota plates. Or Missouri plates. I'm pretty sure that was all most all of them was Alabama plates. And the thing is, the Alabama has an interesting scheme for the way that they do their license plates. Instead of having to put on a sticker saying what county you're from, like Kentucky does, or just not giving a fuck, like West Virginia and Virginia do, Alabama designates its counties by license plates by a one- or two-digit number at the front of the license plate number. For instance, the furthest northwest county of Alabama is Lauderdale, and that's 41. There are 67 counties in Alabama. Jefferson County, which is not certainly not alphabetical, Jefferson County's one because it's the biggest city. Mobile and Montgomery are two and three, and then it goes in alphabetical order. And so you can tell who's at the beach and where they came from just by looking at the license plates.
Yeah.
And that was not a whole bunch of Yankees from Mississippi, Yankees from Louisiana. Because Louisiana, for all that it has, doesn't have any beautiful white sand Gulf beaches that I'm aware of. You got to go over into Texas, you know, Corpus Christi over there and... you know, over there in John Britvo country, or else you got to go
Galveston.
You got to go east to the beaches of Mississippi, Alabama, and the Florida Panhandle, and you know, western Florida. And I'm pretty sure those were probably all Georgia plates, Mississippi plates, Louisiana plates, Arkansas plates, Tennessee plates. Yeah. You know, South Carolina and North Carolina, they're going to go to their own damn beaches. But if you're in West Georgia, you're probably going to go down to Panama City or Gulf Shores or Orange Beach or Dauphin Island. But, you know, they're burning. And Governor Meemaw, who is probably the most responsible of all the maggot governors, as weird as it is to say, she's given up on being responsible. Just the other day, I had Agnes and I were listening to the daily update from Make West Virginia Great Big Old Governor Jim Justice, and he said, "What I got in my hand right now is the only bullet we got in our gun for fighting this virus." Because in West Virginia, you can't make a reference to trying to beat something without a metaphor of figuring out how to shoot it. This right here, this little mask, is the only bullet we got for beating this virus. And you gotta wear your mask.
in no way, shape, form, or fashion can you not wear your mask. Because my next bullet in my gun is to shut down all the bars.
Because the drunks are spreading the virus. Never mind that there are more people in churches in West Virginia on any given Sunday than in every bar in West Virginia all week long. He's such a coward that he does not have the guts to call out the disease spreaders, the super spreader events that are taking place every fucking Sunday here.
Deputy Dog.
And nobody will make anybody wear a mask. I've been places where people are wearing masks, and even the people behind the counter or behind the cash register or whatever, you know, they got it down below their nose. Oh, thanks. Thanks for trying, Cletus.
And these Republican governors are inspired by cartoons and comic strips. You got Deputy Dog in your state there, West Virginia. And down a further south, you got Mammy Yoakum in what, Alabama?
Yeah, Governor Meemaw.
As Governor Meemaw. Come here, give me more some sugar.
You know. And so there's nothing to be optimistic about. You can be optimistic in New York because New York is light yellow. It's not even gold anymore. That means that they've controlled the growth of the disease and might be on the way to turning green. Same for Massachusetts and Connecticut and Rhode Island and Maine. But after that, you don't get to another yellow state till you get to Delaware. The entire eastern United States is either gold or blood red. You cross the Mississippi and bang, Louisiana red, Missouri red, Arkansas gold, getting ready to turn red. And the only yellow states there are South Dakota, Nebraska, and Wyoming. Montana's red. Alaska and Hawaii have turned gold. At risk.
Alaska and Hawaii.
Yeah.
I can see Hawaii, but Jesus, Alaska?
Yeah.
There's more moose.
What to Delaware? I don't know, Alaska.
It was a New Jersey, Bob, as she wore a New Jersey.
Ah, of course. You were waiting for that one, yeah.
Yeah, I sure was.
But the thing is, every one of these places, well, you know, this is no time to be playing the blame game. Yes, it is! Every one of these places are experiencing spread not because of the actions of responsible people who wash their hands, don't touch their face, maintain social distancing, and wear masks. Every one of these outbreaks is being spread by mask-hole covidiots and Trump voters and churchgoers and beach partiers.
And that's the other layer on the great bean dip of 2020. The other layer is upcoming election. In the midst of all of this, as if elections weren't chaotic and crazy enough, you know, we've got the conventions, such as they are, coming up. And then a couple of months after that, we all get to vote. Maybe by mail, maybe by showing up, maybe not at all.
The dead ain't going to vote, Scott.
Well, they were doing it.
I know, once upon a time, but yeah. Ralph's wants to, we're over time, but Ralph's wants to know, has the West Virginia governor made wearing masks mandatory? Yes. Yeah, I mean, I'm not barking at you, Ralph's. Yeah, he has, but there are so many loopholes that it's effectively meaningless, and he refuses to make it mandatory. It's a mandatory suggestion. And he said the other day, now, make no mistake, in no way, shape, form, or fashion am I going to make this a matter of calling the law. We're West Virginians, and we know how to do the right thing. No, we don't. No, we fucking don't. Because no, we fucking aren't. I mean, it's better. You go to Walmart, I'd say it's at like 90% masks, maybe. Kroger,
kind of similar, sort of. But up at my little Rippy Mart, the Wiggling Pig, no. And the thing is, most of these places will not look at somebody and tell them to put one on. And then again the collective Kleidi, who are wearing their masks as chin straps.
Yeah. Well.
Now there is a little bit of good news out there.
Well, you,
Lou.
Lou
reminded me there was kind of a victory today. The Trump administration agreed in court Tuesday to rescind its rule requiring international college students to take classes in person during the pandemic. The Immigration and Customs Enforcement ruling was seen as an effort to pressure schools into opening in the fall and had faced a wide variety of lawsuits. Oh, universities all over this country were suing them. Lou said, I thought it was displeasure with foreigners, but apparently the real reason was the real reason from the Washington Post. They were getting their asses sued off.
Yeah.
Because foreign students are the lifeblood of just about every institution of higher learning in this country. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you're the University of Alabama, the University of California at Los Angeles, the University of Iowa, or Busted Knuckle Community College. They were all suing.
And they pay full freight. Because they're not in-state people, which helps the college, no matter what state you're in. I'm sure all of the colleges...
Oh, no, out-of-state tuition is what colleges, state colleges live for, because it's four or five, you know, the massive multipliers more than in-state tuition. And institute tuition is through the roof now. And David in South Carolina, Stan, reminds us, subject line, hurricane parties. Reminds me of the old hurricane parties during Camille. I think I mentioned that the other night. I just remember those stories. Less dangerous than COVID parties because hurricane parties are not contagious. Right. And hurricanes are gone in a couple of days. And quite often the hurricane partiers are gone, too.
Yeah. All right. Well, I see, like you said, we're over time. But, the football analogy... you know, will only take you so far, but it just is maybe I'm overthinking it, but it's just a wonder to me that people who can understand football and are conversant and they know how that works, they just refuse to apply that dynamic to the current situation. And I know it's frustrating as hell for me to think that some might, but most of them won't. You know, because they're
well. I used to say that people wouldn't get out into the streets until the cable was off. I was happily proven wrong by the recent marches and by the pretty diverse group that participated in them. But this is something different. There's another old saying out there, Scott, that when the belly rumbles, the head will learn.
Yeah.
Well,
one more thing, real.
Well, there's. I got to figure out what the analogous form is for this pandemic. What is it? When somebody you love dies, you'll take it seriously. And what a horrible thing if that's how stupid we are.
That it's got to come to that before people will begin to get it.
And I know we're over and everything, but there's something else that needs to be mentioned. I'm seeing this more and more on Facebook. So-and-so answered a question. And people who are ostensibly liberal, progressive, whatever we're calling ourselves, posting, do you know anyone who's had COVID-19 or died from it? And a lot of the times you click on that and it's a bunch of mask-hole COVIDiots.
Yeah.
No. It's just the media. And so once again, Zuckerberg is promoting toxic information. And I just as a heads up, If you see one of those in your feed, take a minute, look at it, check the responses, and, you know, see if people are saying yes and yes or yes and no. Or if it's just a whole bunch of mask hole COVID idiots.
Well, I'm very selective in terms of stuff that I click.
Because stupidity in this country, Scott, and maybe this is where we end. Stupidity in this country is spreading far faster than the virus.
Can I do one quick thing that I meant to do? Anybody who has Amazon Prime Video, check out the 2007 video, Dreams with Sharp Teeth, or if you can't remember that title, Harlan Ellison. It's a documentary about him.
Oh, wow. I could be interested in that.
And what jogged my memory was the line about TV. If you take away their TV, they will be out in the streets. You will appreciate what he has to say about that and so much more in that documentary. God, we could use him in these days, because he brooked no nonsense from anybody in his writing and in his public appearances.
Yeah, no, that was somebody else. Never mind. I was about to confuse my science fiction writers, but we'll leave it at that. Scott, have yourself a good evening, my friend.
You too, Bob. Take care. Be safe, and love to you and Agnes, your family, and the Horn family at large. You're great people.
Thank you, and it all goes back in your direction.
Thank you. Take care.
See you, Scott. And so, here we are at the end of the program. Had a note from Darlene early on, just offering thanks. Not just, but offering thanks. Darlene said, "That is so sweet, Gary. Gary's been so generous, too. Cool on a two-day birthday." Indeed, it's not everybody that gets one of those. So, the community made Darlene's birthday even more fun than it otherwise would have been. Let's see here. That's true, too. James in Illinois says, "The real question you have to ask yourself is how bad has it got to get before the morons stop calling it a Democrat hoax?" And at the risk of doing prayer meeting Wednesday earlier, some of this reminds me a little bit of the myth in Genesis about Pharaoh ignoring the various curses sent upon him by the great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky. And he only finally said, "Go, really, leave, no," when the angel of death came and took the heir to the pharaonic throne. You know, I wouldn't take my scientific advice or anything from that, but the power of myth, as Joseph Campbell pointed out, lies in its ability to translate across temporal barriers. And maybe, God, what a horror to contemplate. But hey, at least we're contemplating all this together. And this community is keeping me sane. I hope the conversation helps you maintain some degree of equanimity or equilibrium or whatever the right word is. And thank all of you so much for keeping the program on the air. Thanks to each and every one of you who participates in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Hey, a reminder, the best place to listen to the Mike Malloy Show is at HeadOn.live, a brand new Malloy program this evening, 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, and you'll enjoy it more here at the Horn. And by all means, if you want to, feel free to use the chat room for augmenting your listening pleasure, the chat room at HeadOn.live. We're mighty tickled and pleased to be able to run the Mike Malloy Show. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thanks, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And remember, if you want to help out a grassroots organization doing work unlike any other, and do so without it ever even touching your pocket. When you make purchases at Amazon, use smile.amazon.com and select Coal River Mountain Watch as the beneficiary of a portion of the proceeds of your purchase. And if we all do it, it'll be a big help. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Jeremy says, no problem. I'm glad that the tag team of Billable Rick and I and the Stop Bobs keep you sane. The creativeness definitely keeps me sane. Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you. And thank you, Billable. And please, as this thing grows and expands, stay home if you possibly can. If you live in a civilized area where you can get home delivery of your for your needs, use that. Don't go out and about. Too many maggots out there. Too many mask-hole COVIDiots. Don't give them the satisfaction of making you one of their victims. If you do go out, you know the drill. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Wear your mask, maintain social distance, and for the love of all that is or isn't holy, if you see some burbling idiot coming towards you, mumbling about the Dr. Fauci or blithering and blathering on about it being a hoax or how he don't know nobody has ever got it and don't nobody know who's ever doing it, nobody what's never got it, and ain't nobody died of it, and it's all the media, and any of that. Go the other way. Go quickly. Assume, based on what we were talking about this evening, assume that a great number of those dumbasses are packing heat. So for a variety of very good reasons, avoid them like the plague. Because they are. Later.